The day, O'Gorman versus the City of Chicago. Pulafat.
May it please the court, my name is Amy Epton and I have been representing Mr. O'Gorman since April of 2010 following his criminal acquittal and when he started trying to get his job back with the city. We were all quite surprised that he was not reinstated because the criminal case so clearly went in his favor, and we were shocked when no one would reply to us and he was never reinstated. He found out much later, and this is one of the important mistakes in or errors in Judge Dow's decision. Mr. O'Gorman did not know at that time, he did not find out until 2011, that he was on Mayor Daley's secret blacklist of political enemies.
You know, I'd like to ask you about that, please, if I may. Regarding your due process claim based on the damage by the do not hire list to your to his liberty interest. Is it your argument that the city can be held responsible for publishing that list when all the city did was comply with an FOIA request from the BGA?
It's my position or our position that the list in itself is a due process violation because there is no pre nor post process to clear who is on that list and who is not on that list. So once you're on that list, there is no process to get off that list. So just being on that list is a due process violation by itself because there's no process. And there is a push nowadays to make sure that people who have been convicted of various crimes are afforded the opportunity for employment because it is important for the state that people get employment. So there must be some reason that Mr. O'Gorman is forever barred from every type of city employment when other people who have been convicted of crimes are allowed that opportunity.
Okay, but putting all of that aside, what the city did here was comply with an FOIA request. And I wondered if there's any case support for the proposition that complying with such a request would constitute publication of the material.
Well,
when, you know, the recipients of the FOIA information later make that material public.
Your Honor, under Snowden versus Adams, disclosure to one person who has no legal obligation to keep the information private still constitutes publication. So,
if it's a legally compelled disclosure to that person?
If there is no, if that person is not required to keep that information private,
no.
It would be
the issue has to do with whether the city's disclosure to that person is legally compelled, isn't it?
Well, I would say that it's still publication, whether they're legally complied to do it or whether it's their choice, they did it.
Let me ask you about this list. Chicago's a big city. There are a lot of people to keep track of, if you want to keep track of people you don't want to hire. I'm wondering how your theory here would apply, let's say, to Greencastle, Indiana, or to another small town in southern Illinois, where the mayor would have a memory that could handle the list of people that she doesn't trust and wouldn't want to hire for the city. Is that a violation of those people's constitutional rights, the mayor's memory?
The mayor's memory is certainly not a violation.
How is this different?
The difference is that person in that situation could apply for a job and would be considered on the merits. The mayor might choose not to hire him because of what the mayor remembered. But in this case, Mr. O'Gorman is not allowed to be considered on the merits simply because he's on this list. And he's on this list because he did not go through the hearing that at the time was tainted. So simple placement on this list prevents him from employment. He's never to be considered on the merits for a position with any city agency.
But if a mayor just does that orally and by memory, there's no violation?
Well, if the mayor, presumably the mayor would have to give some kind of reason as to why somebody is being declined.
I don't trust him.
Okay, well, but in a small town, that's a much different situation from a city of Chicago where every single public city employment position is closed to him. And it's closed without any, and to remember, he did not even know he was on this list until 2011. So he and along with 4,500 other people were on this list without any such knowledge. There was no way to challenge it. So if the mayor were to deny someone employment because he says, I don't trust you, this individual could presumably go to somebody and say, well, but what's wrong with me? Why am I not trustworthy? Here there is no way to get off this list.
Is there any allegation in the complaint that the publication of the Do Not Hire list impacted his ability to obtain a job in his profession as a carpenter? With any employer other than the city of Chicago?
No, he was, the distinction is that he was a carpenter supervisor. And what his role was to supervise various complicated and many different employment job sites at the same time. He was not actually physically a carpenter at that time. So his job was not, while he is a member of the Carpenters Union, his job was not to be a carpenter, but to be a carpenter supervisor.
So did it impact his ability to be a carpenter supervisor?
There's nothing in the record, but of course this is a motion to dismiss, but there's nothing in the record that shows that he applied to some private contractor who turned him down because he was on the list, but it was clearly futile to apply, and he had been a government employee for quite some time, so there is a difference between government supervision of a contracting job site and private supervision. So to the extent that I don't know whether he applied for a private contracting position, but he considered himself to be a government employee and was very proud of it.
Did you present the claim of malicious prosecution and the claim of a conspiracy below?
It's not labeled malicious prosecution in the complaint, but it is labeled that he was prosecuted selectively when Arrow and Beal were not prosecuted, when everything pointed to the fact that they were the ones who committed the malfeasance. So without using the words malicious prosecution, the latter part of the complaint does talk about the fact that he was prosecuted and Arrow and Beal were not prosecuted.
With or without probable cause? Are you saying was he prosecuted without probable cause?
Well, in 2007, the Inspector General, William Marbach, asked the superintendent of all of the trades for the city of Chicago to tell him whether any of the material that Mr. O'Gorman was alleged to have received from Arrow was on the job sites in the city of Chicago. This is 2 years after all of this took place. And Mr. Donovan, who was the superintendent of all the trades, delegated this to a number of foremen at every single job site that Mr. O'Gorman had worked at. And I've seen the records. They are very detailed. Every single item was present and on the job site. Every drill, every belt, every single piece of equipment. And so when Mr. Donovan said this to Mr. Marbach, Mr. Marbach said, well, we can still get him on the cabinets, which is $5,000 worth of kitchen cabinets that Mr. O'Gorman bought through Beal and for which he has receipts. And the criminal court said those are legitimate receipts. So in 2007...
That's not quite responsive. What I'm trying to get at is whether there was probable cause for the prosecution, even though it resulted in his acquittal, on the cabinets.
I believe not, Your Honor, because the receipts are clearly legitimate and everything else was accounted for, so there was no probable cause. If I would like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Sure.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Walton?
May it please the court. The district court properly dismissed Mr. O'Gorman's complaint with prejudice because he fails to state any plausible claim for relief. We identify a number of grounds why this court should affirm that decision. Today I want to focus really on two: why Mr. O'Gorman's property due process claims and occupational liberty due process claims are legally meritless.
I'm wondering how a person who's wrongly placed on a do not hire list could ever challenge that placement. I mean, is there a different legal action that that person could take?
Well, Your Honor, that person would not have a constitutional claim at stake, of course, because there's no property right that's at issue in such a case. If you're an applicant who's not currently employed by the City of Chicago, you're applying for new employment, you don't have a property right that is at stake. So whatever form that would take, and Mr. Gorman, of course, has brought a number of constitutional claims, since there is no property right that's at stake, it wouldn't be able to take that sort of a form. Conceivably, Your Honor, there are concerns that Mr. O'Gorman's raised about the ability to challenge one's inclusion on the do not hire list. Those are matters that are outside of the record, which I'm unable to address in the context of a Rule 12 motion. Even his own complaint identifies there are circumstances where individuals' names can be removed from the do not hire, which is actually in city parlance referred to the ineligible for rehire list, as these are former employees who were either terminated or resigned in lieu of discharge, as Mr. O'Gorman did. So these are individuals who had an opportunity for process, which either resulted in their termination, or an opportunity for process which they walked away from, as Mr. O'Gorman did. So the due process concerns that Mr. O'Gorman speaks to are absent because there's opportunity for hearing, and to the extent there's also no property interest that is at stake. So someone who is mistakenly on the list, the ability for them to challenge their inclusion on the list is beyond the facts that are part of this particular complaint. I'd like to first address those property concerns that Mr. O'Gorman addresses in his property due process claims. On appeal, he presses only three claimed deprivations of property without procedural due process. First, his 2007 resignation in the face of personnel charges. He calls this a constructive discharge, but of course it was a resignation that occurred in August 2007. And two other instances where he was not subsequently rehired. First in 2010, after he was acquitted of criminal charges in state court, and again in 2011, sometime after the city disclosed its ineligible for rehire list to the Better Government Association through a FOIA request, with his name on that list, among 217 other individuals. As to his 2007 resignation, or so-called constructive discharge, this is not a due process violation. Mr. O'Gorman was given the opportunity for process through a personnel hearing at that time.
He alleges he was told that was going to be a sham, right?
He does allege that, yes, Your Honor.
So isn't your claim on that, your defense on that, a lot stronger on statute of limitations grounds than on the merits?
I believe we have a very strong statute of limitations argument there, Your Honor, but I think an equally strong claim with relation to the merits. Because either Mr. O'Gorman was aware of this putative sham before the hearing began. He could have brought that very claim to the as part of his personnel hearing. I was told by the an individual in the Department of Human Services that they've got it in for me, that they're stacking up evidence against me, that this is going to be a sham. He had an opportunity to seek review of a negative decision by that personnel hearing through a petition for writ of certiorari in the Circuit Court of Cook County. As an aside, Your Honor, in this ruling, he also maybe could have brought a counterclaim then in Circuit Court through that petition for some sort of other due process violation at that time. So his opportunities to challenge those concerns for a purported sham hearing were all available at that time. And we've cited cases, including Carmody, Your Honor, where an individual who's being subjected to a hearing that even though when they believe in the term that Mr. Carmody used in that case was that the hearing wasn't a hearing but a lynching and walked away from that, this court has said that that is a circumstance where you're not going to be able to bring a due process claim for deprivation of property on the basis of flaws in that hearing if you abandon that hearing. As to his subsequent 2010-2011 claims that he was denied subsequent reemployment by the city, there's no property interest at stake in that future city employment. As a general rule, there is no property interest in future public employment or rehiring. And the grounds that Mr. O'Gorman cites for why there would be some sort of reason are that Mr. Scalise, who was a supervisor of his in general services, or Mr. Huberman, who he claims who had worked at one time as the mayoral chief of staff, made promises to him that he would be reemployed if he beat the criminal charges. Well, neither Mr. Scalise nor Mr. Huberman had any legal authority granted by the city, by statute, by ordinance, by act of any individual, that could allow them to bind the city to a contract for future city employment, especially in light of the fact that there was a written contract, the collective bargaining agreement, and personnel rules, which explicitly stated that once you're out, you have no more employment relationship with the city once you've resigned your position. And those CBA and personnel rules are really quite explicit, as I said. There's not only no property interest, but that your employment relationship with the city is terminated. You're in the field of all those people that just are not employed by the city. The city is also, in terms of being added to the do not hire list, I want to note that the city is not required to provide a hearing to someone seeking to get off of the do not hire list for that very reason. There's no property interest in future city employment. If you're on that ineligible for rehire list and you're trying to seek subsequent city employment, there's no property interest in that, so no due process rights attach. So, just to summarize, Mr. O'Gorman's 07 claim for constructive discharge was not a deprivation of due process because the city gave him an opportunity for process. Mr. O'Gorman's 2010 and 2011 failure to rehire claims failed because there was no property interest at stake. Moving to Mr. O'Gorman's occupational liberty due process claims. He presses two claims where he was deprived of occupational liberty without due process, both concerning the city's refusal to rehire him in 2010, again in 2011. And in that context, he identifies what he believes are three statements that were made by the city or could somehow be attributed to the city. First, statements on the Inspector General's Office website, published in 2007. The city's civil lawsuit against Mr. O'Gorman for false claims and other things that are proceeding in the Circuit Court of Cook County, and a Better Government Association press release that relayed information obtained from the city listing O'Gorman as being among a number of people who were barred from city employment. Those claims are meritless. First, there's no loss of an occupational liberty interest merely because the city refused to rehire Mr. O'Gorman. He didn't have any tangible right to be rehired into his old position or to any other city job for that matter. Second, and this is very important, and Your Honor, you've highlighted this, Mr. O'Gorman doesn't identify any other loss of opportunity to work in his chosen field as a carpenter, as a tradesman, as a supervisor, as now is newly being asserted here during oral argument. Those claims are simply absent. There's no due process deprivation because Mr. O'Gorman has the opportunity for a name-clearing hearing, whether that's through the hearing here for the ongoing civil litigation that's going on, or through he would have had that opportunity at the 07 personnel hearing as well.
So the civil litigation is still going on in state court?
It is, Your Honor. My understanding of the current status of that is that it's currently at the pleading stage. There's been efforts on Mr. O'Gorman's side to add some counterclaims to this, and I believe those are still under litigation and under advisement in the circuit court.
Pleading stage was filed in 2010?
It was filed in 07 originally, Your Honor, put aside for a period of time, basically renewed or kind of reinvigorated in 2010.
After the acquittal?
That's correct, Your Honor. My understanding is there's been no discovery in that case yet, but they're still hashing out what are the specific claims they're going to be brought. I also note that inclusion on the Do Not Hire list does not deprive Mr. O'Gorman of any tangible right previously held, which is the standard that's required for stating an occupational liberty claim. I want to address briefly the so-called stigmatizing statements that were here as well. And again, there were three, and none of them are going to satisfy the stigma plus test that are for an occupational liberty claim. The IGO's statements on its websites, first published in 2007, well, they may be stigmatizing, but that's not enough. They must also be false. Those statements were true statements that Mr. O'Gorman was arrested, was charged with a variety of charged with a criminal complaint, had a number of charges that were going to be brought against him. True statements. Truth is a defense to this because it undermines the underlying claim of government defamation. Second, the statements related in 2010 to the city's civil lawsuit. Statements made in a civil lawsuit are not actionable for a claim for occupational liberty deprivation. In fact, that hearing itself was providing the opportunity for the city and Mr. O'Gorman to go directly head-to-head and test the veracity of those types of claims. The very concern he's identified is being remedied by the fact that hearing is going on. And finally, regarding the BGA's publication of the Do Not Hire list or the ineligible for rehire list, the city didn't make any intentional publication to the public. The BGA did. And the city disclosed this through a forced did this through a disclosure to the BGA because it was complying with a lawful state FOIA request. So O'Gorman's occupational liberty claims are also meritless.
On that last point, I've got to frankly question the value. If you know you're putting this list together and you know it's going to be subject to FOIA requests, isn't publication pretty readily foreseeable?
Mm-hmm. Maybe. So, Your Honor,
I've never seen this wrinkle in liberty interest cases before, where the potentially the arguably damaging material is prepared in a document that isn't going to be published directly, but that will be subject to disclosure.
The circumstance, I will say, Your Honor, that I think that the cases discussing government as the occupational liberty cases that Mr. O'Gorman cites and that this court has resolved that look at this question of publication, look at to the question of the government as publisher, and that publication requirement is publication to the general public, it's publication to likely future employers. The fact that the government has information that's accessible isn't a sign that the city is, or that government entity is going to, on its own volition, be the publisher. And in fact, not only forced publication, but in the case cited, discussed by Mr. O'Gorman here a few moments ago, what you're looking at there is the government was actually the initiator of the communication as well. Here's the board of, the BGA is the city didn't ask the BGA, please file a FOIA request with us so we can disclose this information. They're not seeking to do this. And you need to, I think, have some sort of intentional disclosure of this information by the government to inform liability on this claim. The underlying state court claim here the underlying theory of stigmatizing statements is borrowed heavily from state law regarding defamation. We cite Perry versus FBI that talks about the concurring decision there.
But isn't it at least arguable that the city published the list for purposes of the due process claim? I mean, at least at this early stage of the litigation.
Forgive me, Your Honor. Could you clarify that question?
I mean, it seems to me that providing the Do Not Hire list to the BGA, the city, you know, knows that the BGA is going to reveal that list to the public. The BGA is a public organization, and that's what they do.
Yes, and it's not an intentional disclosure with an eye to trying to do damage to Mr. O'Gorman. And the underlying state court
Well, excuse me. Did you damage to everyone on that list? I guess I don't know.
Well, the law of defamation, the case law discussing stigmatizing statements, borrows the law of stigma from the law of defamation. They talk about it as stigmatizing statements is defamation plus. And we cite Perry versus FBI, the concurring decision there that says that if the underlying so-called stigmatizing statement doesn't rise to the level of a state, wouldn't satisfy the common law tort of defamation, then you're probably not going to have the type of stigmatizing statement that gives rise to a occupational liberty claim. Now, defamation is an intentional tort. It requires that a statement be made with the intention of undermining someone's public reputation to cause that sort of harm. And in this circumstance where it's not the city initiating the communication, and the city didn't hold a press release when it disclosed this information and say, by the way, here's a list of 218 names of people who had previously worked for the city, who resigned under a variety of circumstances or were terminated. And by the way, don't forget, here's Mr. O'Gorman, and we want to talk a lot about why Mr. O'Gorman is not a good candidate. That type of disclosure, that type of intentional statements that would have been denigrating to Mr. O'Gorman were not part of that disclosure. So I don't think that this is going to satisfy that rule.
Mr. Walloff, is this would the city be required under a FOIA request to list the individuals who failed the fire or police exam?
Forgive me, Your Honor, would it be...
Would the city be subject to a FOIA request that they had to honor if the request was to name the people who were did not pass the fire or police exam? I'm just wondering if there's a parallel at all.
I'm not prepared to answer that question just because I don't know if there's any terms under the collective bargaining agreement or anything like that that the fire and police department have got that might affect that type of disclosure. I just don't know the answer, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Wolf.
If there are additional...
I didn't want to cut you off.
Please. If there are no further questions, I'd just ask that this court affirm the judgment of the district court.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Epton?
Your Honor, Mr. O'Gorman has not alleged defamation, and the occupational liberty standard is different in that it doesn't require animus on the part of the government in the publication. There are certainly ways that the FOIA request could have been responded to that would have protected people's privacy or various other things.
How would that happen?
Well, it seems to me that I'm not an expert on FOIA requests, but it seems to me that the government could have worked with the BGA and with the Shackman monitor so that only certain things were revealed in the response to the FOIA request.
There's a lawsuit.
you would be able to block out the actual name of the individual?
No, but perhaps the reason for the entry on the list.
I think the only indication that I've seen is just resignation in lieu of discharge for Mr. O'Gorman. That's all it says.
Right. That's
others
correct.
Others say termination, disciplinary, discharge, etc.
That's correct, Your Honor. But
so how defamatory or how stigmatizing is that?
Well, the fact that his is a lifetime ban, where people are banned for 3 months or 6 months, it implies that there's something very serious that he did wrong. I would also like to address the question of whether he has a property interest. I don't think that that's proper to decide on a motion to dismiss, because given that the mayor has, in fact, the power to put people on this list or to keep them off the list, there's a question of fact as to whether there was an implied contract, because his chief of staff was the one who told Mr. O'Gorman, don't worry about it, you'll be acquitted at your criminal trial and you can have your job back.
Implied contract?
Well, it could be considered that. It is at the motion to dismiss stage, so inferences should be in favor of the plaintiff. So if there's nothing further.
Thank you, Ms.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thanks to all counsel. Case is taken under advisement.